If you love a good deal, then you should know Domino's has an offer that you can't pass up. Order today and get any large specialty pizza for $10.99 when you carry out. That's right, any large specialty pizza for just $10.99. For the love of a good offer, get to a Domino's and get as many large specialty pizzas as you can carry out for only $10.99 each. Order using the Domino's app or visit Domino's.com where you can follow your order with Domino's Tracker. Don't miss out on this great deal from Domino's. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
Hi, I'm Jaden Sterling, international best-selling author of The Alchemy of True Success. And thanks so much for tuning in to Soul to Profit Radio, bringing business to spirituality and spirituality to business. Each show, we are committed to helping you, our enlightened audience, discover your purpose, share your gifts, and monetize your message. Life is short, so let's get started.
Welcome, everyone, to Soul to Profit Radio, where we assist you to make money doing what you love. I have a fantastic show planned for you today, and before I introduce my special guest, I wanted to take a moment and acknowledge the millions of people affected by the typhoon in the Philippines. As you know, millions of people are without food, water, and shelter. And you can help by contributing financially. And I'd also like to remind everyone, you can also help by using the power of your prayers and your thoughts, taking 30 seconds out of your day and visualizing thousands of helpful people, food, and other forms of assistance reaching the Philippines will speed up the recovery process. And Canadians who would like to make a donation to the relief efforts can donate $5 to the Canadian Red Cross by texting Red Cross to short code 3033. And the Canadian government is matching individual Canadian donations made from November 8th to December 9th. Also, I've posted a link from the Red Cross on my Facebook page, which is also the same page you can go to if you have a question for myself or for Thomas during today's interview. So please visit facebook.com/Jaden Sterling, J-A-D-E-N, Sterling, S-T-E-R-L-I-N-G, Wealth, Wisdom, and the number 2. That will bring you to my Facebook fan page, and you can post any questions that you have for Thomas or myself today. And while you're there, please click on the like button. That always helps. So today I have a super special, magical, awesome treat for you. In fact, I'm introducing you to one of the most extraordinary human beings I've ever met. And I know that's a big statement because I've met a lot of people in the last 45 years. I met my guest, Thomas Baylor, at a writer's conference a year ago and was so taken by what he had to say. After he got off stage, I ran over to him and said, "Would you please repeat the story of what your father, Jack, said about creativity?" And I won't repeat it now because hopefully he'll share it on the show today. Thomas Baylor is a lyricist, producer, creator, and has worked with some of the legends in the music business, including Michael Jackson, Nora Ephron, Cher, Elvis, Quincy Jones, and the list goes on and on. Thomas is also a prolific writer and has penned an incredibly inspirational book, which I absolutely love. It's called Anything is Possible, A Tale of Aesop, which hopefully he'll share more about his book with us today as well. So Thomas, welcome to Soul to Profit Radio.
Thank you, Jaden. It's good to be here.
Where are you calling in from today?
I'm calling in from New York City. I'm looking out the Hudson right now. It's a beautiful day. It's cold here, but lovely. In fact, I think right now the temperature is 35 degrees.
Excellent. Just perfect. Maybe a light jacket and a scarf around your neck will work.
I love that.
So please tell our listeners, you know, for those of you who don't know your story, will you share a little bit about your background and how you got involved in the music business?
Absolutely. I loved your description of my of my career, and I appreciate it very much. I would add to that that I'm a composer. I was a composer first and then picked up writing lyrics. I don't know. I come from a family of storytellers, so words were always important as well as music. You know, I heard you mention my dad, and, of course, I love to talk about my dad because he was an extraordinary man, and I was very fortunate to grow up under his aegis as my brother was. And Dad was a self-made guy who ended up going to Juilliard when he was a little older and was a great trumpet player, played in the studios out in L.A. where I grew up. And he was extraordinary in so many ways, one of which was that he was very I'm trying to find a place to talk because my housekeeper comes today and I forgot what we scheduled this. And it gets very noisy in this house when the housekeeper's here. And
find the nearest closet,
her being here. Exactly. I got to find a place to hide.
Yeah.
You know, I first fell in love with music watching my father play his trumpet in the living room. I'm kind of 3 years old. And my first memory of him playing, and he got a look in his eyes, Jaden, that I saw at no other time. And it was a look of passion, and I wanted some of that. That's all I knew. And I told him I wanted to play too, and he said, well, that's fine, son. You know, with every opportunity comes an equal responsibility. And I said, well, okay, what does that mean? He said, well, you're going to have to practice, 10 minutes a day. And I was like, okay, fine. So that's the way it started for me. And because of my love, you know, Dad never said do this, do that. But he was there for my brother and me. And when we asked questions, he rarely answered them. Usually when I'd ask him a question, I would say, Dad, how do you do so-and-so? And he'd say, how do you think you do it? I said, well, if I knew, I wouldn't ask you. And he said, yeah, but if you did know. So realizing that I was getting nowhere with him, I would have to take action with something. I said, well, perhaps you do this. And he goes, great start. And then I come back and I said, well, Dad, that didn't work. And he said, yeah, but I bet you have another idea. And you know he was right. And I loved the way he raised us that way. And by the time I was maybe 5 years old, I wrote and read and wrote music. I hadn't learned how to really read and write English by that time. And again, it was because I loved it, and Dad would support me. But he never said, you need to do this, you need to do that. Never in his life did he say that. But I remember being very proud sitting next to him one night, because we used to have people come over at our house on Tuesday nights. We just kind of jam around. And I was sitting next to him, and he was... So it was a small little group, and they were playing Gershwin's Lady Be Good. And I'm sitting next to Dad, looking at the music on the stand, and I'm so proud of myself because I can see the notes that he's playing while he's playing them. And it was like the first time I'd ever encountered that with somebody else playing, and it was so wonderful. And then all of a sudden, he started playing notes that weren't on the page. And I was looking around to see what was going on, and he looked down at me and he winked. And later on, I said, Dad, what were you doing? You weren't playing notes. They weren't on the page. He said, oh, yes. Oh, I was improvising. And I said, oh, what does that mean? He says, well, that's when you let the music take you. What an elegant answer. And that's stayed with me ever since. And I said, okay, is that creative? And he goes, yeah, it is. So... maybe a little later, and this is what I think you were referring to when you talked to me after my talk. I asked him one day, I said, Dad, how do you be creative? And he said, I'll tell you how I do it. And what I loved about Dad, one of the things I love so much, is that he never said this is the way. In fact, he used to say, son, if somebody says this is the way, run the other way. It does not exist. So he says, I'll tell you how I do it. I declare what I want and let it go. Now, I'm 6 years old, and I was, huh? And he says, well, son, when we make a decision, You know, we are all energy, and we send energy out. And if we make a decision and say what we want, if what we want serves others, you're very likely to get it. I said, really? He goes, that's been my experience. And I said, okay, so what do I do after I let it go? He said, well, that's when you must be diligent, because when this idea comes to you, you may not recognize it at first, because if you did, it wouldn't be new. I love that, too, because, again, as a six-year-old, I got it. I understood. And he said, and I said, well, how do you know if it's good or bad? And he said, well, that's easy, son. You know when you're around people you like, and you know when you're around people you don't like. So just go with that. I said, okay. And he said, now, even though you may not understand this idea, if it feels okay, you invite it in. And like you do when Georgie, your buddy, comes over and you throw him an apple when he walks in the house, throw an apple to that idea. Be a good host. And if that idea is supposed to stay with you, it will become a part of you. And if it isn't supposed to stay with you, it will leave happily and tell other ideas it has found a good host. And that has been the formula for creating for me since I was 6 years old. And I thank Dad every day of my life for that. And the fact is, Jaden, that when it comes to being creative, I have never hit a roadblock. I have barely hit a rock in the road. That system for me works so perfectly. And I've been in situations where I have avoided panic by asking myself, what do I want? I was in a situation with Ford Motor Company one time where I put a group together to do all of their commercials. And we were basically the opening act for Henry Ford II. He was an amazing man. And I had met him, and we were, we had performed that night, and there was a huge party at the Greenbrier. He had rented the entire Greenbrier for all of the dealers. And there was a huge party, and during the party, Jack Ryan, who was the executive vice president of J. Walter Thompson and head of the Ford account, came up to me, and Jaden, he was ashen. And I said, what's wrong? And he says, we're in trouble. I said, what? He said, Henry wants Susie. Well, Susie, I had put this group together. My brother and I put this group together. It was a cross-section of America. And we had this little cute 18-year-old who was like the girl next door, you know, real perky and fun, a great dancer, and just cute as she could be. And apparently, Henry wanted a little more that was in the contract. And I said, why are you telling me this? I was 23 years old. And he said, because it's your group. And he walked away. And I started to panic. But then I thought, wait a minute. What do I want? Well, I want to neutralize this. I want to save Susie from any untoward situation. And I do not want to make my boss angry. So what do I want? I want to neutralize the situation. The question immediately came to me, what are you going to do about it? And I thought, well, I know Mr. Ford because I've been dealing with him for about the last 2 months. Now, he wouldn't let us call him Mr. Ford. We had to call him Henry. And he was a casual guy, strong guy, amazing man. Loved his brain and his mind and how he worked. And I thought, you know what, I bet that he wouldn't feel the way he feels right now if he knew that Susie was my fiance. So we had another girl in the group. Janice Hansen was an amazing singer. Look her up on YouTube. She sang the lead on Look of Love with Brazil 66. And we had snatched her away from the group because we could pay her a lot more money. So I walked up to Janice. I said, Janice, I need your engagement ring. And she said, go fly a kite. And I said, no, this is serious. I really need it. Please trust me. I'll bring it right back. She said, okay. So I stuck it on Susie, and I walked up to Henry, and I said, Henry, I'd love to introduce you to my fiancée, Susan Teague. And Henry was cordial, lovely, wonderful. And the whole group ended up in his room that night, hanging out and just having a great time. So by saying, what do I want? I solved the problem that scared the living daylights out of me. And by the way, 3 days later, I heard from Jack Ryan, By the way, Henry Ford found out that what you said was a ruse. And I said, okay, I'm fired. Well, the next meeting I had with him, I walked into his office and he said, you, I like you. Now, isn't that amazing?
Amazing.
And it all started with, what do you want?
Wow.
That's the way I've lived my life, and it's the way I live my life now. And actually, I'm building a whole program about this. I thought everybody was raised with a dad like my dad, and I grew up just like when you came up to me after I spoke. You know, I realized that, no, it was a very unique situation, and I know what you do, Jade, and I love what you stand for, and I love what you write, and I think we're all saying the same thing, but we are such individuals that we strike different groups of people because they happen to resonate with our voice. And this is what I love about what we're calling self-education or thought leaders or anything like that. You know, is that we're not going to replace the universities, nor do we need to. But the thing is that there are so many other ways to learn things than the set way. Just like Dad said, if somebody said this is the way, run the other way. Well, I started a program now that we're putting up online very shortly, as well as I'm incorporating into my speaking, and I speak to high schools, through corporations, to CEOs. And it's basically that what you want wants you. Because what I also learned from my dad was Dad said, you know, son, when you have an idea that comes, he said, if you have a thought, and that thought, you know, you can feel that thought, that has value. If it happens again, it has more value. If it happens again, write it down and know something else. That thought picked you. And that thought picked you because in this realm that we live in, thoughts need us to become things. And if we look around us, everything we see around us began with a thought. And I'm talking about anything that isn't nature. And with nature, it was the Great Spirit. But with this, anything we look at, a shawl, a chair, a computer, anything that is man-made began with a thought. And the person who had that thought believed that anything was possible. And a great example of that, of course, is Edison. It took him 10,000 tries to make a light bulb. And when things didn't work, he didn't look at it as a failure. He went, oh, good, that doesn't work, next. Oh, good, that doesn't work either, next. And 10,000 tries later, it happened. When Henry Ford went to his engineers and said, I want you to create a V8 engine, and they said, that's impossible. And he said, I believe it is possible, so go to it. And he came in, and he would check up on her. How you doing, guys? No, it's not that we're getting nowhere. I mean, it's just not working. It's not going to happen. He says, yeah, it's possible. Keep at it. Well, guess what? We got that V8 engine. So when thoughts come to us, they pick us to bring them to fruition. And this is what I'm helping to teach people about themselves. That everything, one of my greatest teachers, his name was George Tremblay. He taught Quincy Jones. Oh, he taught Randy Newman. He taught me. He taught so many people. He was an amazing man. And although we studied music with him, I learned more about philosophy. And when I asked him one time, George, aren't I supposed to be studying music with you? He said, Tommy, you are music. I'm showing you where to put it. What a great answer that was.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
wow.
He used to say that if you look up educate, it comes from the Latin educare, which means to bring forth. Everything that we ever need to know is in us already. We are part of this universe. Everything that was in the universe, that will be in the universe, is in us already. We are a reflection of that. And yet we have been taught that we're finite. And I call that believing a lie. A lot of kids come to me, or a lot of people, a lot of times when I speak, I say, how many people can sing here? about 60% will raise their hands. And I'm not talking about being an artist. I'm just saying that you're comfortable singing, about 60%. 40% can't sing. You believed a lie. And you know what? A lot of times those lies are delivered to you to try to protect you from somebody else's perspective of who you are. But somebody else's perspective of who you are doesn't have to be who you become. And when we look inside of ourselves and just trust and say, you know what, this is what I like, this is what I want. I have another. You want to hear another I want story?
I would love to.
When I first got out, I went to USC in music and had a great time. And I was a trumpet player, but I grew up singing because we did that for fun. So I had an unfortunate operation I didn't know I was going to have, but I couldn't play my trumpet for a year, so I was kind of sideswiped, not knowing what I was going to do with my time. And I found out that I could sing in terms of not hurting the damaging the operation. So I auditioned for the Smothers Brothers show, which was the number one show in television then. And it was a great show, and it also gave the censors headaches, which was always kind of fun. And so when you're a singer on a show like that, sometimes on camera, you sing ins and outs of things we call interstitial material. And you sing the theme, and it's a lot of fun, but telling the truth, I was only working about 30% of the time. So I watched what the other singers did because it was my first job. And I noticed that the singers read books, played cards, knitted. No, we didn't have cell phones then. And I looked around myself. I looked around and I thought, I am at freaking CBS Television, the number one network in the world. I want to know more. And as soon as I said, I want to know more, the question came up, what are you going to do about it? And I thought, you know what, I'm going to start at the top. So I walked up to the director's door and knocked on the door. His name is Stan Harris. And he says, yeah, come in. I said, hi, I'm Tommy Baber. I just started working on the show. You may not know who I am. And he says, oh, I know you. What can I do for you? And I said, well, you know, I have a lot of time on my hands. And I was thinking, if I'm really quiet and unobtrusive and stay out of your way, may I follow you around while you direct the show? And he looked at me as if he recognized a long-lost relative. And he said, absolutely. What are you doing right now? And I said, I'm following you, sir. And that's the way it started. And I just walked around with him. Well, because most people didn't know who I was on the show, so I just began, they associated me with the director. And pretty soon, people in the art department were coming up to me and saying, hey, I want to show you what I'm drawing for this next bit. Look at this. And then the costume department would say, hey, look what I'm doing. We're doing this pirate number. Look at how cool this is. And pretty soon, I was being addressed by everybody on the show. And it was so much fun. And I learned how to produce a show that year. And it was all by saying, what do I want? And that's why I say that anything is possible, because limited thinking, as you know, and as you talk about, you know, will keep us from going and moving. But just saying what do you want and answering that, and a lot of people are afraid to do that, I have found. And they say, well, I don't even know what I want. And what I have found that I can help them with is to have them look at their dreams. And, I mean, right now you may be daydreaming as I'm speaking, which is not a bad thing. But chances are what you're daydreaming about is something you want. So once we determine what that is, then we say, I want this. And all we have to do, and then a lot of people will say, well, my gosh, but I don't know anything about it. That's great. It's almost better that you don't. And all you have to say are the magic words that I have found that works for me is, I'm taking action. That's what I did. I knocked on the director's door and took action. I had no idea what I was going to do. I had no idea what the benefits were going to be about that. I did not know if he was going to throw me out or embrace me. But what I did do, I'll tell you what I'll take credit for, I made myself neutral because I started to think, well, he's not going to want to talk to me. And I thought, I'm not that smart. I don't know what he's going to do. So just go and knock on his door. Be neutral.
That's so powerful, yeah, to be neutral because, like, you're right, often people will nip their success in the bud and they won't even take a step toward it because of their fears and everything that's going on in their thought process. So I love that. So just be neutral. And like you say, we're not smart enough to know what the other person's thinking.
Absolutely, and we're not built to know. But the thing is, somehow we get these ideas and we start painting things black.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we're painting things, why not paint them white?
Touche.
Or why? How about not paint it at all? How about just walking in and say, whatever surprise this is going to be, I'm going to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also found that your passion doesn't have to be how you make a living. As I said, my father was a great trumpet player. But after the war, he decided that he loved playing trumpet so much, he no longer wanted to do it as a job. He wanted to do it for fun. So he went into related businesses, and we ended up with jukeboxes all over Southern California, and we ended up with a record store. So were we in the music business? You bet. It just took on another form.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the tenets by which I live, and the things that I'm sharing with others, not to put into them, but to bring out of them what their desires are, and to put them in, help to put them in tune with their own selves, because all of us are individuals. The other thing to that, I remember when I went to USC, it was the first time I'd ever run into trumpet players that were as educated and as experienced as me. And I went home that night and he said, how is it? And I said, well, oh, my gosh, Dad, I have competition. And he said, stop right there. I said, what? He said, son, there have been 70 billion people at least that have walked this planet, and there's never been a Tommy Baylor, and there never will be another one. You don't have any competition. No one can do what you can do. And I said, but Ronnie Rahm can. He says, yeah, Ronnie Rahm. If you try to be him, you're going to be sorely disappointed. But if he tries to be you, he's going to be the same. But the thing is, if you're both yourselves, you can enjoy each other because you're both great players. So there is no competition. And I talk to actors about that all the time. They go in and say, but there's so much competition. I walk in and there's 40 people for the same job. Yeah, but there's only one you. And I know from being on the other side of the table, I am waiting for that person to walk in. And just like a sales call, there is no such thing as a bad audition, because if you come in and be yourself, people will remember you. And whether or not you're right for that role has nothing to do with your value. In fact, when I was creative director at Radio City Music Hall, and I was casting 130 people a show, huge cast, and people come and say, how did I do? How was my audition? I said, you know, how your audition went has really nothing to do with whether you're going to get the job. And they're like, what? I said, well, here's the deal. We as producers create a show, and we're waiting for you to walk through the door. We already know what our cast look like. And we're waiting for you to walk in through the door. And if you walk in through the door and you're a person and I wanted my cast because I see you in a certain place, you can mess up your audition, and I'll give you a chance to do it again. Because I want you. And that's part of my whole program. What you want, wants you. And if you are very talented and you have great comportment and I see that you have belief in yourself, I'll make a little mark on your resume. And we put those resumes in a different drawer because those are people that we want on our team at some point. So there is no bad audition.
That's excellent. And so many people need to hear that, regardless of what profession they're in and what industry they're in. There's really no bad way of showing up. If you're looking to make a business contact, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a creative type and, you know, like you say, auditioning for a show, that's incredible advice. So, Tommy, speak to us about your muse, because you shared a year ago with me a little bit about that, and I thought it was an incredible story.
My muse. Well, the thing about the muse, I look at my muse as a woman. And, you know, these are personal choices, but to me, a woman gives birth. And creative thoughts are given birth to. So I look at my muse as a woman. And Quincy Jones and I have stayed up night after night talking about this. It's such a fascinating subject to both of us. And what we learned, what we both agreed upon, was that you have to earn your way to the muse. Just like if you meet a girl that you like, you have to earn your way into her heart. How do you do that? Well, you can buy her flowers, diamonds, cars, and all that stuff. That doesn't really earn you into her heart. What earns her into your heart is being yourself and showing her that you care about her and showing her that you are sincere and you show her who you are, because that's the person she falls in love with. And for me, it's the same thing with the muse. We earn our way to the muse, but we don't do it by studying music. I'm not saying studying music will hurt you. I don't mean that at all. But focus is the same study. And if you love music, if you play it every day, if you enjoy yourself with music every day, there is no way on this earth or anywhere else in the universe that you cannot get better. Anything that we love, another thing my father taught me at a very young age was, son, do what you love. If you do what you love, everything else will fall into place. And I'm walking, talking proof of that. And so the muse to me is, she comes to me, and especially comes to me after I say I want something. And what I love about the muse, that is different than a girlfriend, that if the muse comes and I'm not in the mood to listen, she just moves on. In fact, I love when Quincy and I met. I said, hey, Quincy, do you wake up in the middle of the night with a song going through your head? And he goes, all the time. And I said, you write it down? He said, of course I do. Otherwise, it'll go down to Mancini's house.
I love that story.
And that's the point. But the great thing is that if the muse comes to us and we're not in the mood to listen, she moves on. But she moves on without any hard feelings. Now, if your girlfriend comes and gives you attention and you don't pay attention to her, that usually isn't such a good thing to do, because the next time she goes, well, what was with you? But the muse doesn't do that. She comes back the next time as if nothing happened. So if we blow it, or if you call it blowing it, you know, if we're not listening one day, and then we go, what was that melody? Oh, my gosh. I wish I had that melody. And then you hear it on the radio. Wait a minute. The thing is, she won't be back. And to me, that's the way that creativity works. And creativity to me is innovation. And how do we innovate? We innovate by doing the procedures that I've been laying out for you here. That whatever comes to us needs us and wants us and has picked us. And all we have to say is, I'm taking action. And pretty soon then, as soon as you say, I'm taking action, that idea, by the way, you know this, is not an orphan. That idea has the entire universe behind it. So as soon as we say, I'm taking action, we give that idea permission to go round up the things that we need to bring it to fruition. And depending upon what we're asking for, what we're looking for, it could be something that could happen in a minute. It could be something that takes 10 years to build. You know, I'm sure you know this by writing books, writing novels. I'm on my second novel right now. I've already been working on it for 3 years, but I don't think about that. I think about writing what comes to me. The other thing I learned at a young age was creating is listening. And we've kind of already talked about that. But when a melody comes to me, I write it down. Now, what I do with that melody, I'm not sure at the moment, because it doesn't matter. A lot of times, because of the industrial way of thinking, is if we have an idea, it's like, how can we make money with this? Well, that's one way of doing it, but it's only one way. I mean, I think so many of us have been discouraged by parents when we were 8 or 9 years old and said, hey, I want to play the violin. And say, you'll never make money playing the violin. What did that do? What did that have to do with the kid's urge to play it? Absolutely nothing, but it was turned into something of commerce instead of joy. So when words started coming to me, I treated them like melodies. And virtually every word that I've written, whether it's in the Huffington Post, by the way, I have a series of articles in the Huffington Post called Lights Go On, and a lot of it is about what we're talking about right now. A lot of it is about my father and what I learned from him. And when I wrote my novel, my first novel, Anything Is Possible, which is out now in several languages. In fact, we just hit the stores in Greece in Greek, and I'm so happy because Anything Is Possible is a reimagining of the life of Aesop, set in 600 BC in Samos, and it is a hero's journey, and it got the title of Anything Is Possible, not because we thought of it, because as he was progressing through his story that was coming to me by the muse, that, wow, how is he doing this? How did this guy do this? My gosh, anything is possible if he can do this in this time. So that's where the title came from. And so every word that I write, every melody that I write, every lyric that I write comes from listening. And I can tell you that you already do this, too, and I'm talking to your audience, and I'm talking to you, Jaden, that sit down and write your mom a letter. You don't start on the page. You hear it. Dear Mom, you write, Dear Mom. Weather's great here. I wish you were here. I miss you. Guess what? The dog you gave me is getting so big, he's eating me out of the house and home. All of these things that you're writing, you hear first. This is creation. This is how we do it.
So, and that's such an important point, Tom. It's really about, and what I hear you saying is ideas are resourceful, and it's about finding the time and creating that space in order to hear the thoughts. Is that what you mean?
Absolutely. And I can give you another example of that. You just brought something to mind. A friend of mine who was on the board of the Cincinnati Opera called and asked if I would help her think of ways to raise money. They were doing an auction to raise money for the opera. And I said, well, auction me off. And she said, what? I said, well, I'll write a love song for the winning couple. And it was nice. It brought in a nice little piece of change. But what shocked me was, you know, love songs are generally songs of contrast. I was going here, I met you, now I'm going here. My life was this, now my life is this, and I prefer this. And that's just being very general and romantic about it, but that's kind of the way love songs go. The winning couple, if you can believe this, Jaden, had never held another person's hand. They had been childhood sweethearts, never kissed another person. They had three daughters. He was an engineer who was also a painter, which told me a lot about him. She had worked within her neighborhood in about everything that you can think of, giving her time and efforts and connections. And I was coming up with nothing. Now, normally when I write something for someone else, I study them and something pops up. Well, nothing was coming, and I even asked them to each write me about the other person and say that they loved about them. And while it was all beautiful, I was getting nothing. So I actually had a talk with my muse, and I was a little upset because they were saying, hey, where's the song? This is going on for months. This had never happened to me before. So it didn't scare me, but I knew that there was a connection missing. So I said to the muse, look, I put myself out there to raise money for a good cause, and I've got a recipient, and I haven't got a clue for an idea. Give me some help. I need help. And what I heard was, sit down and be quiet. And I did. And when I sat down and was quiet, one word came to me. It was masterpiece. And if you'd like, I'll recite the lyric to you because it's one of my favorites. In fact, when I first sang it to my daughter, she cried, and I ended up singing it at her wedding. And I'm getting ready to sing it at another wedding in a couple of weeks.
We'd love to hear it.
It can be sung. It can be sung by either gender because I wanted it to be, you know, sung by a man or a woman. It says, I awaken to your steps each morning, your eyes glistening brand new. Deep inside I hear a whisper, how grateful am I for you. For we share the same heart, breathing out, breathing in. And only the angels know where you leave off and I begin. The work of our hearts is a masterpiece, each golden moment a masterpiece. Forever and always, my world is you. The work of our hearts is a masterpiece, and so it is, my life, with you. Trust, patience, and forgiveness are words. Trust, patience, and forgiveness are words we rarely say. For they're so embedded in us, we live them every day. And even when we're apart, we're as present as the stars. When I'm asked where my home is, I answer, it's wherever you are. The work of our hearts is a masterpiece, etc. Then the bridge says, you were the first, you'll be the last, the only one I see. In this ever-changing world, you are the rock of life for me. What a joyous ride together, without fanfare, without drum. And this is only the beginning, for the best is yet to come. The work of our hearts is a masterpiece, etc.
That is beyond words. I'm in tears over here listening to this. It's incredible. Thank you for sharing that.
Happy to.
Wow.
But you see, that goes back to saying what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to keep harping on this point, but it works.
Mm-hmm.
I was not finding a thing, and I said to the muse, I want help. And she said, be quiet.
And then you sat down and
she gave me a masterpiece.
Yes,
well, I sat down and I heard one word, masterpiece, and then it all became a whole picture. I saw the whole thing.
Amazing. Thomas, you are incredible. I can't believe our time it's flown by. It seemed like a minute, didn't it, that we got to spend together? And thank you for all that you do, for your message, for sharing the words of your incredible father, Jack Baylor. He's magnificent, and his legacy lives on with the work that you're doing and the books that you're writing. Thank you for that. And please share with our listeners how they can go out and buy your amazing book. It's called Anything is Possible. I've got it in my hand here. I've read it. I love it. It's incredible. Where can all of our listeners buy this book?
Well, and you have two editions to choose from. We recently came out with an illustrated edition. It's the same text, it's the same story, but Yuli Kim is this wonderful illustrator that we found, and I highly recommend it. I won't take the time to tell you about her right now because we're out of time, but she is absolutely brilliant. If you go to Amazon.com and look up Anything is Possible, then add the word illustrated. It'll take you to the illustrated page. You can get it in electronic form, in Kindle, or paperback. And also you can go to my webpage, thomasbaylor.com, thomasbaylor.com. It's in the middle of being rebuilt, but we're still open for business. So if you go to my site, you will see up in the corner it says Aesop's Market. Now the one cool thing about buying it there is that if you buy it from my site, you will receive an autographed copy. Secondly, I'm offering on that page only the composer's demo of my song, She's Out of My Life, that Michael Jackson, of course, made sort of legendary. And that has never been released to the public before. So those are the perks you get by going to my website.
Wonderful.
And those choices are up to you.
You're amazing. Thank you for the gift that you shared. Thank you. Please come back again. We're just about out of time. So thank you so much for your message, for your time, for your energy, and for being you. You're just such a cool guy.
Well, thank you, Jaden. I remember you being the same, and I can't wait till we see each other again.
I look forward to it, my friend. Take care, and everyone have a fantastic week. Tune in next week as I have Tracy Blim, owner of Lazia Healing Center out of Calgary. She's a former architect, and she follows her bliss and passion, and she's monetized her message. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thanks,
thank
Jaden.
You, Thomas. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge, Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.